Only going to hear two bills today, ladies and gentlemen. The two that we're going to hear is House Bill 2722 and House Bill 2746. We will take House Bill 2722 first. And we have Representative Jeff Krupp here who will begin testimony. So, Representative Krupp, thank you very much for being here. Good to see you. So bright and early in the morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for extending your courtesies to me. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, District 37. And I have today the first of quite a few bills that you will be hearing that I have at the request of the Oregon Fire District Directors Association and the Fire Chiefs Association. I have about 12 bills, I think, coming to you. And this is the very first of them. And why am I bringing them? Well, because I have had the honor of being a volunteer firefighter for a little over 10 years now in my local community volunteer fire district. And I have a very close connection to this entire issue. And most of the legislation that you will be seeing coming before you will be dealing with issues revolving around volunteer retention. And this is important to small rural fire districts because it's difficult to get people to give of their time on a volunteer basis and go through all of the training that is now required of them nationally to be accepted and trained as even a basic firefighter, let alone being an EMS either basic, intermediate, or paramedic level EMT person. It's a tremendous time commitment, and that is why we'll be bringing you a whole series of bills to deal with that issue, to make it easier for fire districts, rural fire districts, volunteers, to add incentives, reasons for them to give of their time and be there for their communities when they're needed. It has been one of the most rewarding experiences of my life, I have to tell you, is to be a volunteer firefighter. The enormous sense of that you've done something good for your fellow man is just marvelous. When you've been able to go out there and respond to a circumstance that's very traumatizing to a person, to be able to help them in time of need is just a marvelous feeling. And it makes all the hours of training, and it makes all the hours of getting up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when you have to be at the Capitol, and getting out there and helping someone who's had a car wreck on the freeway, or someone who's having a heart attack, or in the middle of the night, or industrial accidents, as we have some facilities that are in our district. It makes the sacrifice and your family's sacrifice of having to put up with those tones going off in the middle of the night and waking your wife up and all of those things. It makes it worth it. It really does. Volunteer retention is a big issue. But fire districts also are facing some issues that are rather commonsensical, and that's what House Bill 2722 is all about. This really is an idea that was brought to the Fire District Association more by the fire marshal than anyone else. And what this is about is allowing fire districts to have the discretion to not use a district number. Now, my fire district is District 51, just out of the old emergency show. However, a lot of districts today aren't using their numbers at all. We've had districts consolidate. Tualatin Valley is a great example of that. They don't go by their district number. We all refer to them as Tualatin Valley. Lane Rural Fire, we don't refer to them by number. We refer to them by Lane Rural. And so that's, in fact, my district is not referred to as District 51, but Halsey Shed. So because as districts were being consolidated and formed, they weren't using their numbers, to avoid the confusion that has been resulting this, the fire marshal's office thought it was a good idea that we just delete that requirement and allow them to use names if they would so choose. That's all this bill really does. It's kind of a housekeeping measure more than anything else, and we would appreciate your approval. Mr. Chair, that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions for Representative Krupp? Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krupp. Do you anticipate that we pass this, that we will now run out and pour out all the letterhead and repaint trucks and, you know, the associated costs? I mean, we've made some changes to names of things in the past, and we sort of see this, you know, everybody going out and creating a logo, and the associated costs with that, you know, rather than sort of doing it in the stream when you replace your letterhead because you're done using it, you know, I have some, since this isn't really a life-threatening or issue, is that we just not waste money on this, and that we deal with the changes as, you know, we replace the stock of things that, or we have these things printed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, I would say that I would say probably not. I know in the case of our fire district, although the logo has our name and our number on it, and there's nothing in this bill that in essence requires them to remove either one of them. I think it would really be at the discretion. I don't think it'll add much, if anything, for any fire district. It does make it simpler if Tualatin Valley continues to grow, as it has done in recent years. I noticed the chairman's laughing. But as it continues to grow and absorb other districts, it just makes it easier for them, frankly.
Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, this only applies to rural fire districts, and it doesn't have anything to do with the municipal fire district or fire.
I'm looking at the people who really know this stuff sitting in the back of the room, and they're saying, yes, you're correct.
Representative March?
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may be directed at the committee administrator or someone else. As I read this, it says when a district is first organized, they can apply for a number or a name. Is there a provision in here that allows existing districts to apply to be renamed? And I'm struggling with no. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Marsh, no, I don't believe so.
Representative Cruz?
Well, by definition, if a district absorbed another district, would that they'd reorganize, so then that would be a first time. So that's what we're looking at here. Okay, a follow-up?
Yes, yeah. Representative Cruz.
I was asking Burton, so I got the answer.
Burton, Mr. Chair, may I call forward Burton Wiest and Ken Armstrong to join me here? My partners in crime.
My other question, Mr. Chair, and something that's really problematic here is if indeed we pass this bill, and if indeed Representative Krupp carried the bill, then what he do in costume?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, I know this is an issue that causes you great distress, and I would assure you that I will not come, if I'm carrier of the legislation, I will not show up on the House floor dressed in anything other than a suit very similar to what I am in today. Now, I will qualify that, and I will say on the House floor. Doesn't mean that if there was an EMS day here that I wouldn't bring my turnout and my turnout, but not on the House floor.
So, and we, Mr. Chair, follow up, we would also have a similar assurance from the representative that he would not necessarily be requesting unanimous consent for use of a visual aid on this bill then either. Would that be correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, for the record, probably not.
On the record.
I don't know if there's prior restraint.
You know, in the vein of Representative Cruz's discussion, I'm liking the consent agenda more and more.
Good point. Thank you, Ms. Representative Hill. Are there any other questions? You're welcome to stay if you'd like, Trevor.
Mr. Chair, in the interest of not convoluting your hearing any further, I think I shall recuse myself and turn it over to these fine gentlemen. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you, Representative.
Okay, make sure you state your name for the record and go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Burton Wiest with the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, and with me is Ken Armstrong, who represents the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. I would just address one issue, and then Ken, or do you want to
go
no,
first?
No, go ahead.
The question arose, Representative Hill asked the question about, is this going to result in the massive renaming of fire districts? Actually, no. What's happening in the world today is that fire districts are consolidating. The actual number of fire districts are gradually falling over time because with the increasing amount of OSHA regulations and other requirements that are happening in the fire service these days, whether they're volunteer or have a combination paid volunteer, the number of districts are actually falling. I know Representative Tony is from a city that recently is involved in merger, or at least contracting with other districts. And that is a phenomenon happening all over the state. And really what brought this bill was, one, it was kind of antiquated that a number be assigned to all these districts, but also was recognition that when you merge Fire District 1 and Fire District 8, sometimes, you know, is it Fire 1 or Fire 8, or do you call it Fire District 18, or do you assign it a new number, or what do you do? And what happens is to get ownership from both halves of the consolidating district, what you often want to do is you want to give it a name that both can share. And that in Tualatin Valley, as the representative said, is a classic name of that. Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue is the largest department in the state. And they provide fire service to 11 incorporated cities and to a very large unincorporated area in both Clackamas and Washington County. So that's why this is here, to just really legitimize a practice that we've been doing for probably 20 years, and no one noticed that the statutes were conflicting with that process until last fall when the fire marshal asked us to put this bill in to clarify it. So it's a fairly simple, straightforward bill.
We'll hold our questions, and Mr. Armstrong, if you have anything you want to add?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Armstrong, Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. I don't want to specifically address the bill. Representative Krupp and Burton have covered that pretty adequately. I did want to expand just for a moment or two about a comment that Representative Krupp led off with, and that is that there are several bills that we are putting forward this session that are really targeted at trying to improve the lot of the fire service in the state of Oregon, primarily rural Oregon. You're going to see almost all of them come through this committee. We're going to look forward to working with you folks on that. We're within the fire service, we're generally calling 2001 the year of the fire service as we try and make some significant improvements. And I think most of these bills address a lot of different elements to that. I know a good number of your committee members have some experience in the volunteer fire service, and we're going to look forward to working with you. So appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for either Mr. Weiss or Mr. Armstrong? Seeing none, thank you. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House Bill 2722? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2722. I'll open the work session on House Bill 2722.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cruz.
I move House Bill 2722 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 2722 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cruz.
I move House Bill 2722 be added to the consent calendar.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 2722 be added to the consent calendar for the House floor. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. I will close the work session on House Bill 2722. And if there does end up being any objection to this bill being on the consent calendar, I will ask Representative Krupp to carry it. Would you rather carry it?
I would rather carry it.
You be the backup carrier.
I will be the carrier of this.
That would be my desire also.
Thank you. Okay. Before I move into the next hearing, I just want to very quickly congratulate Representative March. Carried the first bill out of this committee on the floor the other day. Except for one no vote, it was a unanimous decision. So thank you, Representative March, for carrying it. And I would add that there were no questions and there was no discussion, and so he did a great job of making sure that everything works smoothly.
The feedback loop that helps.
Feedback helps. Okay, good. With that, then, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2746. And Matt, while the group is coming up here, why don't you go ahead and give us a rundown on this.
House Bill 2746 addresses a difference in the statute between the way that privately owned vehicles and other vehicles in the Portland metropolitan area are treated and government fleets of more than 50 vehicles. Currently, government fleets are required to pass emission standards annually. Everyone else is required to pass emission standards every 2 years. This bill would simply eliminate that special treatment, and government fleets of over 50 vehicles would default back to certifying 2 years like every other vehicle in the area. The fiscal office estimates that state agencies will save $125,000 during the first 3.5 years, and local governments will save $215,000. The Department of Environmental Quality will lose a little over $82,000 in fees generated by those emission tests during that same period.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. We have with Susan Schneider and Roger Johnson from the City of Portland. Please go right ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Susan Schneider of the City of Portland Government Relations Office. House Bill 2746 was introduced at the request of the City of Portland in our continuing efforts to be more efficient and save taxpayer money. This bill would permit, as the staff indicated, would permit government entities with fleets of over 50 vehicles who are required to be tested by DEQ to have them tested biannually instead of annually. With me is Roger Johnson from Fleet Services to discuss in more detail why we think that's a good idea.
Chair Crummell and members of the committee, my name is Roger Johnson. I'm the Director of Vehicle Services in the Bureau of General Services for the City of Portland. And we address this as an opportunity for taxpayers in Oregon to save money while improving efficiencies in government. This bill removes the requirement for governments to certify vehicle emissions compliance twice as often as all other vehicle owners. And all vehicles within the designated geographic area are required to comply with the state DEQ standards by completing the test. But it must be accomplished every 2 years, except that government vehicles must be completed every year. Now, the City of Portland is very supportive with the intent of vehicle emissions testing, and we fully cooperate with the state to provide complete and accurate certification for all vehicles. And we realize the clean air implications and also the economic value with well-maintained vehicles. We establish regularly scheduled maintenance programs. We have accurate replacement of the proper components. We have trained professional mechanics working on the vehicles. And our vehicles consistently pass the state DEQ vehicle emissions tests. Cars driven by the general public, not normally on a regularly scheduled maintenance program, are less likely than city vehicles to consistently pass the emissions tests. The City of Portland understands the leadership role of government. However, the responsibility should not be interpreted to spend time and money without meaningful results. Testing highly compliant and regularly maintained vehicles twice as often as less compliant vehicles does not contribute to the goals of the vehicle emissions testing program. In fact, it represents an unnecessary cost for the citizens of Portland. An annual test and certification is required on 1,450 city vehicles, and if it were changed to the same standard as all other non-government-owned vehicles, we'd only test 725 vehicles a year. We estimate this would save about $30,000 in maintenance costs, but far more in vehicle availability. Vehicles that are in the garages, they're being certified, they're not available for direct services to citizens. And it's not possible to place an exact dollar amount on this, but the significant out-of-service time by removing vehicles such as police patrol cars from public service to provide double the compliance is not an efficient use of government funds. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Questions? Representative Hill.
You said they would save $30,000 in maintenance. Is that an FTE type number, or is that because you won't discover that a vehicle is out of compliance and therefore you won't spend the dollars, then you'll spend it later the next? I'm just trying to, what came up with that $30,000 figure?
Chair Crummell, Representative Hill. We anticipate a certain amount of time with every test. So this is based on the assumption that one half of the tests normally performed each year would not be performed. That's the certification for the DEQ compliance.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Representative Hill, it's the mechanics time we're talking about.
Plus more FTE time.
All right, follow up. Go ahead.
Yes. Following in the existing statute on lines 25 through 29 of the bill, does the City of Portland operate its own testing facility, or do you take it to a DEQ facility to test it?
Yes, the state operates its own facility.
The city.
Excuse me. The city tests and certifies their own vehicles in compliance with the state requirements. The city certifies their own vehicles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill,
yes.
I may. Under supervision from DEQ, they test our equipment and train our, make sure we've trained our people properly.
Sure, go ahead. I guess I don't see what the problem is. You've invested in this equipment. You have it sitting there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, we still pay a fee to DEQ, and we still take the time to do that. And so it's the saving of the time and the downtime of the vehicle when it's in and having that done.
I'm just sort of puzzled here. You're doing it yourself, and your vehicle's in for routine maintenance. That's the big deal. I mean, that we save the fee. I mean, that we can deal with that. I'm just curious in terms of, since you know, air quality in Portland is a large issue, and how many vehicles do you operate? 1,400. It's a very large fleet.
Chair Colonel, Representative Hill. Of our fleet, we actually operate approximately 2,600 vehicles. 1,450 of those are required to comply with the vehicle emissions program, which requires us every year to perform a test, which would, if it were the same as the two-year requirement, would not be required on 1,450 vehicles. So we spend approximately 45 minutes of the mechanic's time. It's about 15 minutes of a supervisor time and some other administrative time associated with every one of those tests, in addition to all the other work we would do on the vehicle. So you are correct that we try to perform the test and the certification during the period of time they're in for normal maintenance, but it still adds considerably to the amount of time and the money and the effort, plus it's an increased amount of time the vehicle is not in service. If we only certified every 2 years, as everyone else, the non-government fleets are certified, then that wouldn't be required. We wouldn't spend that 45 minutes of the mechanic. We wouldn't spend the 15 minutes of the supervisor. We wouldn't spend the other administrative time associated with that, and it wouldn't be out of service for that extra amount of time. Well, it's actually greater than 45 minutes. It's not always done at the time it's in for a regular but even the 45 minutes is a significant amount of money, and it's time that it's off, especially if it goes to the second day. But it's not always possible to perform that certification at the time it's in for its regular scheduled maintenance. So we have to take the vehicle out of service to bring it in so that we comply with the requirement to have the annual DEQ certification.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith, and then Representative King.
I have a couple questions. Thank you. What are the 1,150 other vehicles that aren't subject to this emission standard?
Chair Crummell, Representative Smith. They're all the other trucks and larger vehicles greater than 8,500 GVW, which are not currently required to be tested under the DEQ's vehicle emissions program.
I had one other one.
Go ahead.
How many of these of your fleet are SUVs?
Chair Crummell, Representative Smith, we operate 135 sport utility vehicles in the City of Portland.
Can you follow up, please?
Go ahead.
Can you tell me why the City of Portland has SUVs?
Chair Kummel, Representative Smith. We have SUVs actually for a wide variety of applications. And the vehicles we purchase, and this is actually there's quite a bit of work done when we develop the requirements for vehicles. But often our requirements are, for instance, in the Bull Run watershed, where the waterworks operate, we use a lot of vehicles for a lot of off-road work up there. Sport utility vehicles, we find they're much more effective as an off-road vehicle than a typical sedan or actually a lot of the pickup trucks we use. So it's normally the availability of the vehicle for off-road application that we're using them in the city. Not always, but normally that's the application.
So it takes 135 vehicles to manage the Bull Run watershed?
No, they're not all in the Bull Run watershed. That was an example of how they're used. The Fire Bureau uses them a lot of times for application for off-road, such as in the West Hills, the large park area up there. They also operate when they're off pavement, and it's a much more effective vehicle, and it's a larger size.
Yes, this would not just apply to Portland. I'm assuming it would apply to other municipalities. Would all of these other municipalities also have their own testing station as Portland does?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, I would defer to DEQ for that question, but I believe they don't. I believe some of them are tested at the DEQ station.
May I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Sure. Go ahead.
So I'm assuming that for other municipalities who may not be represented here today, that it would take a great deal of time to take an automobile or whatever vehicle is going to be tested to DEQ to have it tested, take it offline, and return it again, whereas in Portland, at least, they do their own testing. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Tubman, a number of communities,
state your name for the record.
Greg Aldridge with DEQ, a number of communities self-test besides the city of Portland, including several counties, TriMet, Beaverton, Hillsdale, Gresham, and like that. To get to your question, some communities choose not to or have fleets that are less than 50 and then would go to DEQ.
And about how much time estimate how much time that might take to take an automobile offline in order to do that?
Not honestly. Okay. Now, we think it also depend how far a community is from a testing center, what their just rotation is to get a vehicle out of fleet.
Thank
Someone
you.
Take it to the center and back.
Right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brown.
Could you tell me, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
I let you cut in front of one of the other members. Would you hold that thought for a second?
Certainly.
Please, Representative Gerard.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Johnson, I'm assuming that air quality was the original reason for these restrictions to be imposed. But was there any other particular reason that that this committee may not be aware of, that these restrictions were imposed on government vehicles, other than air quality?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard, I don't know all the reasons that DEQ developed the restrictions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard, we've tried to find out the answer to your question. Why was it done this way originally? And we've talked with DEQ, we've talked with OEC, environmental group, who has been active in this area. We've checked with our people who've been very active in the air quality thing, because it affects our quality is a big deal for us, and we're very concerned that we not do anything that causes a problem or would get us out of compliance, because that has implications for everybody, not just the city, but industry in the city. And nobody can remember or knows why it happened, and I think you've looked as well.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gerard, that's correct. We've looked, and I think the historical knowledge is lost at this point.
Mr. Chair,
follow up.
I just want to make sure now that all three of you are saying the same thing. None of you know the reason for these restrictions originally.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, that's correct. What we did then double-check was to be sure that with our understanding of the air quality requirements today, that this would not have a detrimental impact, and it does not.
On the carbon monoxide?
Everything.
Okay.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you check these vehicles on a yearly basis, do you know how many of these vehicles you lined out of the compliance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, we don't keep that exact statistic. I know almost always is the response I get from the supervisors. We have 8 garages around the city of Portland, and the response I receive is they are almost always in compliance when they are checked.
Can you tell me what the age of your fleet is, the vehicle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, we keep statistics on the age of the entire fleet of vehicles. Just on the vehicles that are covered by the DEQ emissions requirements, we don't. We have an 8-year replacement cycle on the sedan fleet. So I don't know exactly what the average is on the vehicles required, the 1,450 vehicles requiring the DEQ test, which would be the sedans, pickups, and vans. But they all operate with either an 8 or a 10-year life.
And then follow up again?
Yes, follow up.
Do you know how many registered vehicles there are within the city of Portland?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, I do not.
Would it be fair to say that the 1,400 vehicles represent here is a very, very small part of the total number of vehicles?
Mr. Chair and Representative Brown, yes. We test every biennial approximately 1.2 million, and we're talking about 8,100 vehicles that would be in this special, I shouldn't say exemption, but in the change. So it would be a very, very small percent.
So it would be fair to say they'd have a very small impact on it if they were moved to a 2-year cycle.
Mr. Chair and Representative Brown, yes, that's correct. And we also recognize that city-maintained or municipal-maintained fleets are probably one of the best-maintained vehicles on the road. So the air quality benefit would be very, very minor in change.
Thank you.
Representative Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is regarding, it specifically mentions the government units affected, staff, City of Portland, other local governments in the tri-metropolitan area and Jackson County areas with fleets of more than 50 vehicles. So is it safe to assume that those are the only areas or governmental units that currently have fleets of over 50 vehicles?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth. Well, no, I'm sure there are other fleets greater than that size, but there's no testing outside of the Portland metropolitan area or the Medford area. So if there's fleets in Eugene or something, unless I'm misunderstanding your question.
Well, and that's kind of looking in the future. If one of these communities are in some point in the future required to do DEQ testing, would they automatically fall under this bill?
Yes. Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Worth, yes, they would fall under the same requirements.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Tomei?
Yes, Mr. Aldrich. It seems to me that I've read recently that there is a move towards not testing automobiles, newly made automobiles, as frequently as been done in the past. Is my memory correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Tomei, yes, that is correct. There are proposals out there to change from biannual testing to every 4-year testing for the newest model years, yes.
Okay. If that were changed, then would that also apply to the automobiles on these fleets from municipalities?
Mr. Chair and Representative Tomei, only if this provision were to be changed,
right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2746? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2746, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2746.
I move that we move 2746 to the House floor for due pass.
Representative Tome moves House Bill 2746 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There'd be a no on this. I think governmental entities have a responsibility to maintain higher standards. We impose this on my community, and I think the overall savings aren't that great to change a policy, which I think sets a higher example for government and air quality standards. So I will be a no.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Yes,
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Having come from a city to which this would be applied, I know that the way they take care of their vehicles is much more carefully than I take care of my own. And I would imagine that all the automobiles or vehicles that would be affected by this probably are in better condition than most privately owned automobiles. They have their own people who work, what do you call people who work on cars?
Mechanics,
thank you. Mechanics. They're on staff who keep cars working at this optimum condition. So I would guess that it would be very rare that any of them would not pass the test. So it seems to me that what we're doing is asking them to adhere to a more rigorous standard than is necessary, and certainly more than civilians must pass.
Representative Gerard?
I think it odd that we could not find why these restrictions were imposed, and because of that, this would appear to me to be a misappropriation of taxpayer dollars to comply with something that nobody knows what they're trying to comply with. So I will support Representative Tomei's bill.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Okay. Thank you very much. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Beck.
Excused.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Hill?
No.
Representative Ford?
Excused.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Wirt?
Aye.
Chair Crowell?
Aye. House Bill 2746, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed and is on its way to the floor. Representative Tomei, would you like to carry this? Thank you very much. With that, I'll close the public hearing on work session on House Bill 2746. And let's see, is there anything else that we need to discuss? We will not hear any of the other bills today. We'll move them to another time appropriate on the on the agenda. Anything else for the good of the order? With that, then, if there's no objections, we are adjourned. Mm-hmm.